The White Network presents The Heretics Hour with Carolyn Yeager.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to a special episode of The Heretics Hour on this Memorial Day, May 27th, 2013. This is our long-anticipated The White Network first birthday show. So joining me, Carolyn Yeager, in our spacious studio tonight is Tan Stoffel of Age of Treason blog and Hadding Scott of National Socialist Worldview blog. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello. Yes. And a happy birthday to you both.
Yes, happy birthday.
Yeah.
Happy 1 year anniversary.
Yeah, we are the staff of the White Network, so we're all gathered here together. And we're here to enjoy ourselves by talking about whatever we feel like talking about, actually, and to hear from you, our listeners, if you feel like calling in during the second hour of the program. The number is 830-443-4911. And you can also send an email message anytime to Carolyn at carolynyeager.net. With two others on with me, I should be able to monitor the emails better than I usually do. And just so you know, if you send an email, don't expect that it shows up in my inbox in this account immediately. This is a little bit of a slow account, but it gets there, and nothing should be held up beyond the time of the program. So I will be looking at it more regularly than I usually do. So to start off, we're going to try to address our network and our website and how we think we're doing, how we fit into the overall scheme of things on the Internet, and criticisms that others may have of us as we work our way into discussing current issues we think are important. So I'm going to give Tan the honor of getting the ball rolling by reporting on our visitor activity and download activity over the course of the year and what it says about our work. And I don't think you have to be scrupulously honest in this either, Tan.
Right. We talked a little bit about this just beforehand, and the inside joke is we don't really obsess over our numbers. We don't actually collect our numbers, and I just found out that our statistics gathering has been broken since January, and we haven't even looked at it. It's my fault for falling down on that one. But at least we have the web server logs and can always go and at least see the pattern of downloads. And before the thing stopped working, when some version upgrade broke it, it was trending upward. It's not, an exponential avalanche of growth, but it's a slow, steady, healthy growth, I think, in interest and links from people who are discovering us and then telling their friends about us, and the slow, steady growth that comes from that kind of interest being generated.
Right, all right. It feels like it that way to me, and I think that of course, some shows draw more listeners and downloads than others, and a lot of it depends on people linking to it from other places. If it goes way up like that, but as I've said before, when we started. Naturally, I thought, oh, well, we'll develop a real network here, probably. And you even said one time, well, I bet people will be wanting to do shows and we'll have to turn some people down or something. But then once we started, we found that was real time consuming. And you got tired of it real quick. And then I got tired of it. And I'm just to be real honest, and nothing wrong with anybody, but, I'm just real satisfied with where we are, and I don't I'm not saying if somebody would want to do a show. In fact, every so often, Tan and Hadding, I say to people who I'm talking to, who I think would be, would be good, I say, well, you might be interested in doing a show on the White Network, just to see what they would say. And generally they end up responding, maybe after a little this and that they're really too busy. They couldn't fit a regular show in and things like that. So there are not too many people who are willing to do a weekly show. And there are other networks out there that people who are willing to do that are doing it on, and they're not all necessarily good fits for us here at all. So we're going to talk about what kind of a place we are here in a minute. But I'm all over that. I've gotten over that whole idea that I want to. I guess it's a kind of competitive thing, maybe, but that, you know, I want us to be bigger, or I want to look good or something. I just don't care about that anymore.
Well, it's something, it's in the society around us, this idea that growth, you've got to be, you know, growing by leaps and bounds in order to be successful. And there's some truth to that in life and bacteria in petri dishes. If it's not growing, it's dying. But my ambition all along, as I've said in these quarterly things that we have, was to give you a platform to continue your show. And I'm glad that you survived the wreck that VOR became, you know, the network that you came from, that you previously were on, pretty much stopped operating shortly after you left. And I'm glad to have enabled you to continue not only with Heretics Hour, but then to do so much more programming, the Saturday afternoon show and the International Jew Show. I think altogether with the hours, the 5 hours of programming that you do every week, you've already done more in the 1 year at the White Network than you did in the whole, how long we were at VOR, 3 years? Add up,
yeah,
in hours, maybe not in, and maybe also in program count, but you had, for much of the time at VOR, you only had a 1 hour show.
That's right. I've increased tremendously, and I was full of energy. And that's part of it, is that I am doing all I can do, literally. Literally, I can't do anymore. And I'm not becoming, you know, more energetic. I'm only going to become less energetic, probably. So really, I don't see, you know, that's a big reason why I'm not into an expansionist mode. And Hadding doesn't want to expand too much either, right, Hadding? I mean, he feels a certain limit to what he's willing to do
I've got other things that take my time and that I try to stay focused on to some extent. And, you know, when I have to break that routine to do a show, it's sometimes it's hard for me to get back to what I was doing, you know. It's just, I just have other things that I'm doing, you know.
Do you have a little bit of ADH or ADHD or what?
No, because what's your problem, Hadding?
No, because I think I do. Because I was told that when you have that, you have a hard time switching from one thing to the other. And I know you've mentioned to me several times, Hadding, that when you get out of the thing you're working on, it's hard for you to get back into it. I know that for myself. I look back, I realize that I get totally into something, and I'm very happy, and I don't want to do anything else. And then, you know, it's hard for me to switch to something else. I'm not flexible in the sense of switching back and forth and in and out of things. And so I thought maybe it was that. Somebody told me it was that's a characteristic of those people. So I thought maybe...
I see the same thing in programming, what I do for a living. There are certain projects that are very easy to knock off very quickly. You can just do without too much thought. But for the really deep stuff, and for a lot of the work that I do, the blog posts that I do and the podcast that I do, requires almost a deep sea diving effort where you have a lot of preparation, and then you actually get in the suit and you go down to the bottom. And the last thing you want to do is get a phone call while you're on the bottom that pulls you all the way back up to the top. And, you know, your concentration is ruined. Your the interruption is just devastating. So, yeah, I see
that.
Yeah,
okay, that's good. Yeah, so for these reasons, listeners, this is why we are probably going to stay the way we are. It's not meaning that we wouldn't add a show somewhere, but like Hadding, I too have other things, and I don't get as much of my other projects done as I would like. I'm always trying to juggle all of them, and I do have to move around, but I need to finish one thing before I move on to another one. I really don't like working on several things at one time. I don't like that at all.
Multitask.
So, I'm not.
Hey, can I say something? Now that I've got Hadding on the air, I can say this, that Hadding, thank you for joining us. Thank you for doing the International Jew every week. I know Carol and I talked about it, and the original conception was that I would join her, but I knew my limitations. I knew that I wouldn't be able to show up every week, and I'm so glad that you decided to do it and have been doing it, and you've been doing a fantastic job at it. So thanks.
Thank you.
Well, I really enjoy doing the International Jew. Don't you enjoy doing it, Hattie?
It's all right. You know, somebody's got to inject some logic into it.
Oh, gosh. This is this ongoing little thing. Well, later on, we're going to talk about the protocols and actually not the protocols, but what's behind jewelry? You know, how organized? Is it evolutionary or is it criminal conspiracy and so on? But right now, let's continue with where we're going. And I just say that I think, okay, I have this question here. Is there anyone out there on radio, either one of you, that you admire or think is doing an especially good job that, you know, that maybe we should wish were working with us or we could emulate or anything like that? Do you think that we are, you know, behind some others that are doing a better job than we are or talking about the right kind of things and we're not or anything like that?
I hardly keep up with anything that other people are doing unless they do something to impinge on my efforts.
I would say about the same thing. I don't regularly listen to other people's radio. I did for a while when I was entertaining the thought of doing a podcast myself. I wanted to see what other people had done, and I had regularly listened to I'm spacing on his name, the guy with the shaven head that's does the three-hour-long show. James Edwards, right. And I used to enjoy, you know, when I would be sitting in my garage splitting some wood, I'd be listening to the 3 hours of James Edwards. But and I that was when I resolved that I was not going to do a three-hour-long show because so much of it was just filler.
Mm-hmm. Really?
But since doing my own, my plate is full. I have no shortage, really, of items to comment on. And my focus is mainly on commenting on things that are going on in the world that I think I could point to friends or family and say, here, look at this. This is what I've been talking about. This is look at it from this point of view. Isn't, you know, don't you see what I see? Because that's where I've had the most success in convincing people that I'm onto something and turning their heads around is in doing that and pointing out things that are right in front of their own faces that they never thought to look at in that way before. And by pointing it out to them, then it's like the old saying about, you know, if you just give a man a fish, tomorrow he'll be hungry still. But if you teach a man how to fish, he can feed himself for the rest of his life. It's the same idea with teaching people how to see this stuff themselves, which I understand that I'm stuck or it seems like I'm stuck at a certain intermediate level or beginner level even of awareness building. And it's a conscious effort on my part because I see that as being something that I'm interested in and something I do pretty well, I think. And so I keep doing it. And rather than, you know, it's not that I don't see that there's more advanced topics to talk about, but
I think you do a great job, Tan. And I hope you keep going. I really, you better keep going. And but I do listen to other radio. I've listened to radio for a long time. And I have to say, I will say, in all honesty, that I think the White Network is my favorite network. Would be if I, well, that's probably because I'm a part of it, that it is the kind of programs that I like. But I think that we do very well and we have some of the best radio right now out there, which is maybe saying that there's, you know, we should be doing better than the whole movement should be doing better than it's doing. But in any event, there's been a lot of hits on certain networks, and maybe they were trying too hard and trying to do too much, and that's what we're not doing. And so we're probably going to last as long as we individually last. So, go ahead, Dan.
I have to say that I said I don't listen to any other radio, but I do listen to our 5 hours, the 4 hours that you do, every week, the Heretics Hour and the Saturday afternoon, and I always listen to the International Jew. I find it extremely educational, and the banter back and forth between you guys is exactly what we thought it would be. It's better than we conceived, I think, or better than I conceived it would be. And it's very eye-opening, all of the stuff that you do. And with that 5 hours a week of listening to what's coming out on our own network, I really don't have any more available time for listening. There's only so much I do where I'm able to listen to radio while I'm doing something else.
Well, I would say then you're listening to the best, so you just keep going right ahead and you're not missing too much. Because what you mentioned about filler, there is a lot that I hear that is filler that I consider. And I don't think we have filler hardly at all on the White Network. So there's some good things I'm saying about our network for our birthday program. And the other thing, you have talked about what you are doing, and you're starting to tie your shows in now a little bit more with your blog.
Which I think is real
interesting, and from the downloads I can see that people think that they like that too, because there's so much bad news going on right now, and we'll get into that. It's too bad we have to talk about all the bad news, but that's about what we've got happening right now. I made the comment, I've noted here that that I think that we're about the only web presence that doesn't allow Jews at all, let alone Blacks, Asians, and other non-white groups. And then you came back and said, well, but there's, let's not forget VNN and CI, Mike Delaney, Andre. Well, that's not what I was talking about exactly. Yeah, they're all anti-Jewish, but they don't. If a Jew comes on their network or writes a comment to a program they're on or something, or something they've written, they allow it. And if there's a non-white and it's clearly a non-white, they allow it and they answer or whatever. But we don't. And I've made that decision because once we wrote our mission statement that we were going to, and well, our little whatever you call it, whites talking to whites about white interests, and UTAN were pretty clear about preferring it that way, that we were going to be only whites, only a place where only whites were talking to each other without the input from non-whites. And that's right. Why we do it. I just wanted to make that clear to people, because I'm sure that there is some criticism of this, and I haven't heard a lot of it, but I know that nobody else does it. I've heard people say that, kind of that's going too far, and they're just closing themselves off in their own little world or something. But that's not the idea. The idea is that there should be a place. Well, why don't you go ahead and explain that, Tan, because I know...
Well, at the White Network, you're right that we have this explicit policy of excluding Jews, and not even to the point of when Stuart came out as a Jew, we said, well, Stuart, sorry, you can't even comment here anymore. And he was upset about that. But at the Age of Treason blog, I've never had an explicit policy of just saying no Jews allowed. What I've done instead, though, is I have occasionally asked people, are you a Jew? Just because... why not? I mean, one of the things that really bugs me about the situation we're in is the asymmetry of the tactics that we're allowed to use. Jews go around calling anybody they want Nazi, and if they take it a little too far, they seem a little crazy and kooky. But generally, they get away with it a lot easier. They can just take somebody who's spouting certain kinds of ideas and call them a Nazi, and that's it. That person is banned and excluded, whatever. But yeah. On the other hand, if we suspect somebody's a Jew, which is, it's not crazy to think you can tell who's a Jew even on the internet because of the way they think, the way they argue, and other little tells, it's made out like we're insane, that we're crazy. We see Jews under every bed, the old tactic. And that annoys the hell out of me. So I just ask it matter-of-factly now. I've only done it a couple of times, but the couple of times I've done it have been very... informative. And I was told somebody left a comment at one point once this had happened with one guy who got all bent out of shape that I had even asked him that whether he was a Jew, and he stormed off in a huff. Somebody else came on and said, you know, oh, you've scared him off now. You know, this, the whole purpose of having them commenting here is so that the new Nazis can learn how to argue with, learn how to, their techniques and how to argue with them. And there is some value to that, that our people learn what the arguments are, that there's a little bit of an educational value to a sparring or like a boxing ring where we can spar with them on equal footing. And whenever we are on equal footing, we do wonderfully against them. Where we don't do so well is in these, in the mainstream forums, where we're silenced and the Jews get to say whatever they want. And our comments in response, even are even if they're directly on topic, are censored, banned, whatever. And so in Age of Treason, all along, I've had a pretty open commenting policy that anybody can make comments. I allow comments through even that are derogatory toward me. And I sometimes wonder, you know, why do I bother letting stupid things like this through? But it's in part to show that sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I'm not afraid of anything that anyone will say to me or in criticism of me. And I respond to some of it, but some of it I just let go unsaid. Whereas the White Network, I'm starting actually to think with Age of Treason of moderating the comments, just because I don't want to deal with the nonsense, the drama that sometimes goes on there, and then I end up deleting a bunch of comments because they're worthless. So yeah, you want to talk, Hattie?
No, I was just agreeing. A lot of people say stuff that probably most of the people saying things have nothing useful to say.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but you can't. That's true, but that's very true. That's very true.
But specifically on the point of the enemy. When the enemy speaks, I do see some value in some places, some forums, in letting the enemy speak, if only so that you can show how to counter their argument, so that there can be a bit of a debate that happens. Not that the debate is even the point. Arguing with Jews is useless, ultimately. But to see their arguments countered and taken apart in a place that allows a no-holds-barred debate is useful, if only to morale and as a lesson. For people.
Yeah. Well,
but
I would
in the White
say,
Network, we're ahead of that. We know that what the end result is. The people who come to the White Network are generally Jew-wise. They don't need to learn those lessons and have big, long threads with the same old arguments over and over again.
Well, I would say that the difference with us is that while people are right that, you know, you should be able to talk and argue your position with all these other people, non-whites, of all variety, it's true, there's plenty of places where that's going on. We just wanted to make the White Network totally white, and then we got the idea that it's whites talking to whites about white issues without interference. And that's what really convinces me. You know, I had a little bit of a difficulty with Stuart because I thought he was a nice guy and all that stuff. And that's how they can be, you know. They can be really nice, and he really put the charm on to me, and he sent me some emails and stuff, and I thought he was a really good guy. And it was hard for me. But you said, you know, they don't want to let us have our own space when I was talking about it with you. Because this caller, you know, this woman caller had kind of lambasted me for letting him call in. And I had to think about that, and it was difficult. And then when you said that, I thought, you're absolutely right. This is what we stand for. And now that's real clear to me. That and then seeing how some of his behavior, he didn't behave badly, but, you know, he was really not taking it very well, finally. He kept trying to get on and stuff. And I started seeing it a little bit differently. Like, why, I hope I'm not picking on Stuart here, but I'm going to use him as an example. Why did he decide to call in our show, my shows? And, you know, there's lots of places. He might call into other places, but why was he seemed to be so determined to join the conversation here?
Yeah, by the way, Stuart, this is not an invitation for you to call in tonight. We're not interested in hearing from you. Somebody who I think was Stuart, named On Watch, posting under the name On Watch, was posting over at my blog in the last couple of posts. And I think it's him because he referred to the same, who was it, Emil... some famous Nazi who was part Jewish.
Yeah, Maurice Emil.
Yeah. Yeah. Emil Maurice was an eighth Jew, apparently.
Yeah.
Which, under the Nuremberg laws, that's not too much.
well, it's not even second degree Michelin. It's like the third degree, right? It's on beyond the, even the reckoning of the Nuremberg Law.
Yeah, see, and he was confusing that with just saying he was Jewish and not wanting to distinguish between how much Jewish somebody is, and, you know, compared to a whole. So he, and then he started confusing a couple of other issues, because I got on there and was commenting there with him. But and I didn't know it was Stuart until you pointed that out in the connection with Emil Maurice.
Well, he was
so
playing a trick.
So, yeah, he was. That's what I saw then. And now I see why we are so smart to have this policy, and we're going to keep it, no matter if people think that we're, you know, that we're less interesting because we don't have all these discussions and arguments going on, because, you know, a lot of people think that that's more interesting when you are talking with these people. And so we say, well, okay, there's lots of places you can do that. But here, we want to see what happens when it's just white people talking to each other. And so I want to give you an example of something that happened here. I got a comment on one of my programs from someone who showed his website. The comment sounded a little strange, but okay, you know. But I clicked on there, found it was a black man who had a website. He was anti-Jewish. That's what I would say. He was, and it seemed very sincerely so. And his comment was intelligent. I didn't write to him and say, well, sorry, I can't take your, you know, accept your comments because of our policy. I figured he should look at our policy. And so I just trashed it. And then he wrote another one about maybe the next show I did. I don't know. And I just didn't post that either. And then he didn't write anymore. And, you know, I had nothing against the man. He's probably, you know, he was agreeing with me. He was saying positive things about the program. But this is just see, we're just you can't let anybody get the foot in the door if you want to keep it to whites. And so it might be a little boring at times, maybe, over at the White Network. And this is a problem that we have. Also, I want to bring up and get you guys' opinion on this. You know, the idea that we're boring, you know, that a white society, I would say there's an awful lot of white people who have never lived in an all-white even community, and would feel like there was something missing, and are so used to multiracialism that feels more interesting to them. And you know, there's a lot of white people who go along with the non-whites who say, "Oh, you white people are just boring, bland, and have nothing interesting going on." And you, what do you say about that? Because I don't agree with that at all.
That's just silly.
Yeah, bland white bread is the usual expression, and it is just silly. It's indoctrination, and they're regurgitating it for the most part that diversity is good. And I've actually had conversations where friends of the family would be saying something like, "Oh, I don't mind a little diversity," and I say, "Oh, you don't mind a little of less people like yourself around?" It's society is much more harmonious when you have people who have common interests and a common background, a common way of seeing things, and feel a common interest with each other. Diversity is a big fat lie. It doesn't cause anything but divisiveness and problems. And
yeah,
people are
like
just regurgitating the indoctrination.
It's like what that Professor Robert Putnam said that McDonald likes to quote, you know, about how diverse communities are really not communities at all, because people withdraw into themselves, and you lose the feeling of community and the reality of community, because it just isn't a community when you have diversity. If you actually ever go into a place where it is all white people, and especially if it's a place where all of those white people have been in the same place for a long time and they really are a community, like in Appalachia or Cajun Louisiana or the Midwest, rural Midwest, you really get a warm feeling about the place and about the people, because they do have a community. They because they have a community, they're more genuine as people. They're not suspicious. They're not so reserved. It's a much better experience than this so-called diversity stuff.
All right. It's safe. It's clean. It's friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as if there's no culture in that kind of environment. There is culture. I really enjoyed bluegrass music and old-time music when I lived in Appalachia. It was a wonderful thing. And I enjoyed Cajun Louisiana very much also. And when I was traveling through the Midwest, I got invited to stay on a farm and attend a demolition derby. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, I say, and I this is absolutely true. I know it's true of me. If I never saw another non-white person for the rest of my life, I would be happy. I would not miss non-white people. And I live amongst plenty of non-white people now when I go out and about, you know, Hispanics and their mestizos for the most part. But I wish they were all gone, you know, but I grew up in basically all white world and, that stayed that way until the 60s and things started to change. Now they've changed dramatically. We'll talk about that unless you want to have say something more. Anybody want to say something more about that?
Yeah, I want to say something. I moved from Southern California to Appalachia. I love it here. I didn't dare imagine that it would be better. I thought it would be a sideways move, that some things would be better, other things wouldn't. But it was pretty much across the board an improvement. And the biggest, best thing is that it's all white here. And it's not a lot of, you know, mysterious Long Island type of white people. It's, you know, good old-fashioned, old-stock American, Scots-Irish and Anglo ancestry, people who have lived here for many generations. And I am... I feel bad about being an immigrant, basically, you know, being an outsider coming to their area. And I'm very respectful of their standoffishness about outsiders. You know, they call people like myself foreigners. You know, we are essentially foreigners. And I don't resent that at all. I understand it. It's part of why this area is still nice, is because the people have a sense of themselves and their traditions and their culture. I'm glad you like bluegrass music, Haddon, because I have for the special next month, Flat and Scruggs lined up. So that's some classic bluegrass, you could say the classic bluegrass music.
Yeah, okay. You want to talk about your this thing you started by putting on a streaming...
You know, we think of the big programs, the Heretics Hour, Saturday Afternoon, the International Jew, and Age of Treason Radio, but this special program thing, it's not on the same level with the other regular programming that we do, but it has become something that I really enjoy doing every month, gathering something or other that I think is worth putting up, bringing to people's attention. And it started off with the idea of just Christmas music, and it was your idea to say, let's do something special around Christmas time, the holidays, the winter solstice.
That's right.
And I thought it worked so well that I went into another type of music for a couple of months and then did the George Lincoln Rockwell hidden or lost recording. And now I think it's a pretty good pattern that I'm going to continue for the foreseeable next few months of having a historic white advocate, you know, somebody, a leader who's really saying something deep and historic, and alternating that with music and, you know, the cultural angle and recording. And perhaps I'll even maybe put more than one special program up a month. I don't want to it is pretty involved. It takes me a couple hours to identify something and then get it and transcode it and do the little bit of organization that it takes to put it together. And I'd like, if people have suggestions for what else they'd like to hear, I remember the Daemonia Nymphae stuff. It was actually an idea from Varg Vikernes that he made on some forum I might have been on his own blog, and so that's what gave me the idea. And that's a Greek cultural music thing. But if somebody wants to post comments on the special program posts to just add their own suggestions, I can't promise that I'll go out and get what you suggest, but I would appreciate links to things, especially that that you think is good, that you'd like to see.
That's right. Very good. Okay. All right. Well, this, let's see, about being all white. I can't think of anything more to say about that. This can be one reason that makes our white displacement more difficult, because people are so used to being around non-whites, and there's a lot of people who want us to ally with non-whites, and there's all these arguments and, you know, positions going around. But Patty.
I want to say something about that. Okay. I think I'm not as hard line as you on this. I think it can be interesting and useful to get input from people of other backgrounds, other races, on issues where they happen to agree. For example, I've had exchanges with blacks that want segregation, right? There's one in particular that I talk to sometimes that, you know, I will tell these other racist white people, mostly Southerners, that the way they're addressing issues is completely wrong, that they need to do things more like the way George Lincoln Rockwell proposed. In other words, they need to take a position on the Negro problem that's more reasonable and treats the blacks fairly. That's my position. We have to be fair to the blacks. We can separate from them if we can convince all the white people that it isn't harmful to the blacks to do it. That's the whole barrier to it. And George Lincoln Rockwell understood that. And when I said this in front of this black guy, who was a black nationalist, he was saying, "Yes, yes, you're right." You know. And
well, you know, I've heard all. I'm sorry. Go ahead and finish.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I've heard all. You know, this has been going on for a long time, and you know, we know George Lincoln Rockwell had a dialogue with the Islam. What was it called?
Nation of Islam.
Nation of Islam and all that. And so there's all kinds of places where this is going on. I'm not saying it shouldn't be going on. I just think that it's good. There's nothing wrong with the fact that we don't have it going on at the white network and people can do it elsewhere. You think so? That's just, we don't have to do like everybody else.
I think what we're doing on the white network, which you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it seems to me that what we're doing is we're presenting a more radical perspective than anybody else, a more radical, thoughtful perspective. I mean, is anybody else doing that? I mean, you've got Greggy, you know, with his lame stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
you
know,
wait a minute. Can't countercurrents?
Well, yeah.
What's lame about countercurrents?
Did you read Greggy's essay on the revision?
The Holocaust? Yes, I did. Yeah, it seemed waffling.
Yes, he waffles. That's my point.
Yeah.
He's not very serious. All right. And I try to be serious, at least. I try not to waffle. I try not to be a hypocrite. And I don't know anybody else that's really serious in that regard.
Well, thank you.
You know, I don't listen to a whole lot of whatever's out there.
Well, what you're saying that you think the white network is presenting a serious position in a more, restrictive way than others are doing. Or maybe restrictive is not the best word, but more clear-cut, a very clear-cut version of
radical. You know, we're radical. And who else is radical?
Well, see, I agree. I think that what we're doing, I don't see other people doing it. They all either do some waffling or they don't want to take such a firm stand. They have to all give in. Just like if we had given in to Stuart, or if I had given in to that black guy who was a perfectly nice guy. But that's not what we're trying to do there. So we're trying to get white people to get used to being around white people and talk about things that are, you know, are important to white people.
Well, my point is that you don't have to be completely hardline about not letting any outside voices be heard if your criterion is to be clear and rational and pure in your message. See, what I would worry about is if we would have some sort of non-white person on a show and get to the point that we seem to be leaning on that person for support. That bothers me. That really bothers me, that kind of thing. You know how these conservative shows will have Michelle Malkin on, and nobody else can talk about immigration, you know, except Michelle Malkin, or at least not to the same degree. They have her on, and that makes it safe for them. I don't like that. On the other hand, you know, having somebody's perspective like that once in a while is a good thing.
But that perspective is all over the place. I just don't
validate.
See why.
Getting an outside perspective is it helps to convince people that the viewpoint is valid. It's mm-hmm. a confirmation. I wouldn't want to rely on something like that all the time, but I think it can help sometimes.
Well, I think we have to have the, I would say, you know, if we were voting on this, I would vote on the basis that we have to keep the policy so that we don't end up just, you know, changing altogether eventually, you know, just
it's,
one thing,
it's
because
the mission.
One thing leads to another.
It's about facilitating a conversation with whites, but the basic principle, which is unique, I wouldn't call it radical, is the idea that we're pro-white, explicitly pro-white, right from the beginning, and that doesn't include Jews, that excludes Jews explicitly. And I remember that was criticized in some offline communications with other people, that it was different than VOR, and we were contrasting our approach with what VOR was doing, and this sneak up on the Jews type of, well, let's talk about all sorts of things, and we'll inject a little, you know, a little talk about the Jews in that, wrap it in the candy. And neither Carolyn nor I thought that was made sense, and we didn't want to do that. We didn't want to participate in that. We wanted to do something that was explicitly pro-white and excluded Jews. But it's not radical, because really, if you look at the mainstream discussion that's going on, all of the different forums where people can discuss, the left wing and right wing can discuss, they exclude Nazis. They exclude racists. And you know what? They don't have to investigate your history of what you've said to decide that you're a Nazi or a racist. All they have to see is one little argument from you that they don't like, and they delete your account and silence you and exclude you. So it's not radical to exclude people who have a different point of view than you, and even to do it right from the beginning, to have a policy that says no racist comments, no Nazis, you're not even going to be allowed to post here once we discover that you're a Nazi or a racist. So we're not being radical in that sense of excluding people. It's just we're radical in who we're excluding. And it is a revolutionary idea that, hey, here's people who are talking pro-white explicitly. They're not trying to hide it. And they're explicitly excluding Jews, and they're not trying to hide it either. That's,
well,
yeah,
what did
that's
you call
different.
It? What did you call it, unique. Tan? You said not radical, but some other.
It's unique.
Oh, unique.
Maybe. Yeah, but I guess it's radical in that sense. But it's not radical in the sense that we're not exclusion itself, and being pro this or that isn't, and anti this or that explicitly isn't radical. It's just that being pro white and anti Jewish is uncommon, and us doing it as explicitly as we did. From the get-go, as part of our mission statement, is fairly unique.
The way I'm using the word radical, it has a completely positive meaning.
Well, I took it that way.
What I'm saying is, a radical, of course, is somebody that goes to the root instead of beating around the bush instead of accepting a bunch of conventional wisdom that may not be valid, instead of avoiding key issues. That's what I mean by radical. And what I was saying was, I wasn't saying at all that excluding non-whites is radical. I'm saying we have other ways that we are radical, and that many other people doing white racialist efforts are not radical. And that this is a more important form or more important quality, this radicalism, than whether or not we might sometimes have or not have, you know, some non-white guest on a show.
That's, well, in that sense, countercurrents is radical as well.
Oh.
In that they get to the root of things and talk about the history.
Yeah, but countercurrents is not only left-wing, it's Jewish. I mean, they're supposed to be right-wing. I know they're supposed to be right. But they appeal to people... how do I put that? They appeal to some kind of new... I hate that new... The new right, you know.
I think it's intellectual. But I see it in a positive sense. I see it as transcending left and right. I don't see it appealing more to the left or to the right. I know they identify themselves as new right. But it's basically history and intellectualism. And you may not... like what Greg Johnson does, but I think he brings to light a lot of things, and I don't peek in there all that often, but when I do, I'm usually I like a lot of the writers that post articles there.
And they try to play all the angles, you know, and then there's the homosexual thing, which is a total turn off to me. And that doesn't mean, as far as I'm concerned. And then I don't like all that super intellectualism either. That doesn't mean I'm stupid.
I don't think a radical waffles on the holohoax the way Greggy does. I'm sorry, that's not radical. And his use of the term new right is a fraud. What he's doing has absolutely nothing in common with the European new right. You know, the European new right is like a sibling to fascism and National Socialism, and Greggy is just scared to death of that kind of association. He's a fraud.
Well, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far. I would disagree. I find value in what he's doing. I don't go about it myself that same way, but I do see value, educational
well, you
value
know,
in what he's producing.
Can you see value in a lot of things? You're very generous minded. You do, you know, and you're not as I guess I would say what's that word? Not
persnickety.
Condemning. I mean, you don't see it as black and white as I do.
I'm thinking of the 14 words. I'm thinking, as long as somebody is on my side of the barricades and is fighting the same fight that I am, even though they may not be going about it the same way I am, even though they may be doing things that I wouldn't do, I don't really focus on criticizing that part as much as I do of thinking the good that they're doing and not being, I don't want to say, Greg doesn't do this that I don't like, and so therefore I'm going to ignore everything he does and anything that anybody who works with him does, because they're associated with him. I don't think that that's productive for us. I've seen it used on us. When you first started doing your shows criticizing homosexuality and how that touched on VOR and touched on the people involved at some of the people involved at Countercurrents, immediately I got back channel criticism that, what are you doing enabling this crazy woman to say these things? And I was perplexed by this, that people held me responsible for what you were saying and wanted me to somehow change how you thought about things.
No,
or what
it didn't.
You
it didn't
say.
Perplex me at all, Tan. It wasn't that they wanted you to change me. They wanted you to drop me.
Yeah,
they
to
wanted
silence
you to quit.
You.
Yeah, they wanted you to quit helping me do a program. They wanted to shut me up.
Well, that's not the way I work. I didn't do it.
Right.
Because I like, you know, there are things I could pick nits with you about or hatting, but I don't pick those nits because we're on the same side fighting together. We have a target-rich environment. out there of other totally evil, totally bad people that we should be firing at instead of these internecine battles, that these destructive things that we have with each other.
Well, true. But let me just say, I have to get this in here, because you mentioned the 14 words. And I just would ask, how do we provide a future for white children if we're going to bring in homosexuality as a not only a normal practice, but as an approved and superior practice, which is what they promote at Countercurrents. I don't care. Are they not doing it in every article that's written and everything that goes on there? But that's the overall that keeps coming back and coming back, with these people there who believe that they're on a superior path, you know, male love. They go into that a lot. Yeah, well,
it does disgust me, but I don't. I don't let that leak into everybody else who posts there, that they agree with that and that therefore they should be ignored or condemned.
Well, it seems to me that they shouldn't post there. See, this is the way I look at it. If they don't agree with that, they shouldn't be posting on that. There's other places to post, you know. So I just don't think you can overlook or ignore something like that, because to me that's basic, very basic. And we need to talk about our white children and why we don't have more white children and all of this. We've still got enough time to say a few things before our break. And so I'll just jump right in, if you don't mind, with how bad things have gotten and how bad white displacement is as it's going on all over the world or in our countries. And I've got some, put off these bullet points. You know, we've recently had Joe Biden on talking about how great Jewish power is in this country and how good that is for us all. And you wrote about that, Tan. And then the Swedish riots and what's going on with that, suppressing any attempt by white people to organize or defend themselves, white Swedes, and they're treating them like they're criminals and allowing the immigrants and the Muslim, who are mostly Muslims, to go ahead and destroy and they're protecting them, the police are, basically. It's shocking and scary. And then there's this London beheading, which is the same thing where, the British people are supposed to just accept these kind of things, you know, and not do anything about it. And then the Boston bombing is the same thing where we had, you know, this goes on and you have these, all these white people are now amputees, if it's all really happened. There's controversy about that. But, you know, my comment was that whites are supposed to show a willingness to accept all this with grace. And this makes others applaud us, and then we're heroes. We're good people because we're just going to go ahead and allow all this to happen to us. So this, to me, are the big problems that we're facing right now that need to be addressed, although there's not a whole lot that one could say that can be done about it. What do you all say?
Patty? I want to give you an opportunity. I know you. Okay, I'll say something. I've made a point of talking about how the indoctrination, in media, academia, is to that white identity. The responsibility of white people is to create a safe environment for everybody else. That's our job. Is to be this universalist. We think about everybody's best interests. Or the one alternative we have, the one out, is libertarianism or individualism, where we only think about ourselves, our own little narrow interests, and there's this vast missing area that we're not allowed to think of our race or our nation. That's condemned and demonized, pathologized. We have big problems. The last couple of podcasts I've talked about have been focused on white problems, our birth rates being low, the borders being open, and our white identity in tatters. That also, a lot of that has to do with an even bigger problem I'm going to talk about tomorrow night, I've already recorded, is the Jewish problem, which is why we're excluding Jews at the network, because it's important. It's probably the most important issue when you're talking about white anything is the Jews. You can't ignore the Jews.
Well, right. Of course you can't.
The Jews won't let you ignore them.
Well, most of the people that I listen to or talk to or hear talking or blogs I look at and so on, all agree on that. But it can't really be, we have to understand, I think we have to work on how to talk to the rest of the white population about the Jews. Even though I've said often that, you know, what we're doing at the White Network is talking to people who already understand that. But go ahead. Was that you, Henning?
Yeah, I would go beyond saying that you can't ignore the Jews. I would say you can't ignore the propaganda premises that the Jews have been pushing. There are people that want to do that. Greggy is one. The Bugsters are another group that do this. They want to do a big dance around the Hullah hoax and other Jewish lies. I don't know how these people imagine that they can get away with that they can dance around this stuff and somehow be successful, as if nobody had ever tried that before. This is what conservatives have been doing for decades, and that's why they don't go anywhere.
I agree. Yeah. And I would think the way we do it is we matter-of-factly do it. The thing about George Lincoln Rockwell always talking about or encountering this, the you-know-whos, when we try to talk in code, it doesn't work. It makes us come across as conspiratorial, as crazy, as a little bit loony. And it comes across much better, as hard as it is for people to deal with, is to just flat out identify in plain terms the Jews and what they're doing.
What they're doing. What they're doing is what has to be explained probably better. There's too many of people like what we're doing here who want to say, oh, the Jews are not as big a problem as we want to make them out to be, and so on. So we need to point out what they're doing. Well, we've got 10 seconds. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to go to our musical break now, and we will return in 5 minutes. Enjoy the music. It's some of my favorite music, this one, and we'll be back.
Sie liegen im Westen und Osten, sie liegen in aller Welt, und ihre Helme verrosten und Kreuz und Hügel zerfällt. Sie liegen verscharrt und versunken im Massengrab und im Meer, aber es leben Halunken und die ziehen noch über sie her. Heute tobt mit frechem Gebaren man durch Blätter und Lüge und Glanz. Sie fielen mit 18 Jahren in einem anderen Tanz. Heute tobt mit frechem Gebaren man durch Blätter und Lüge und Glanz. Sie fielen mit 18 Jahren in einem anderen Tanz. Sie waren nicht ausgezogen um Beute und schnöden Gewinn. Was heute verlacht und verlogen, es hatte für sie einen Sinn. Sie hatten ihr junges Leben nicht weniger lieb als die, heute Höhnen es hinzugeben, sei reine Idiotie. Heute macht man mit funkelnden Wagen und Dünkel und Mammon stark. Sie starben an vielen Tagen noch hinterm Stacheldraht. Heute macht man mit funkelnden Wagen und Dünkel und Mammon stark. Sie starben an vielen Tagen noch hinterm Stacheldraht. Musik.
demonstrieren, mehr Freizeit bei höherem Lohn. Sie mussten ins Feld marschieren, der Vater, der Bruder, der Sohn. Sie gingen die Heimat zu schützen und haben allen entsagt. Was kann uns der Einsatz nützen, hat keiner von ihnen gefragt. Sie haben ihr Leben und Sterben dem Vaterland geweiht und wussten nicht, welchen Herben und welche Erbärmlichkeit. Sie haben ihr Leben und Sterben dem Vaterland geweiht und wussten nicht, welchen Herben und welche Erbärmlichkeit und welche Erbärmlichkeit.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Carolyn Yeager on the Heretics Hour on May 27th. It's Memorial Day. And with me is Tan Stoffel and Hadding Scott. And we're having our birthday, our first birthday program conversation, and it's going pretty well. You know, gentlemen, I just checked my email again, and I don't have any messages except there's a notification of a donation from a wonderful guy who regularly sends money to me, and he is Paul Hendrick. I hope he doesn't mind my mentioning his name, his whole name. But anyway, I hope to meet him someday. He's the most loyal person, and he did send a message. It's not about the birthday, but he says, "Happy Memorial Day, Carolyn. It's a pleasure to send a token of support to a real patriot." Real is in all caps. Well, there's a fan of mine. All right. And so we'll see if we get any more messages. And right now, ladies and gentlemen, you can make a phone call to us if you want to. We'd be happy to hear from you. 830-443-4911. We were getting into the real hardcore stuff about white displacement that we face, and it's a serious, serious issue. I just want to mention here that another thing that I've noticed is that it seems like I'm seeing more white black couples in photography, you know, on the internet, used in advertising and in promotional materials than ever before. It just keeps growing. It's like the normal couple is they used to be a little more subtle with it, you know, as someone who was not really fully white with someone who was white. And, of course, sometimes it'd be, but now you see these couples real, you know, they're really shown as couples, like almost married couples. Sometimes, I'm not necessarily having children with them yet, but, a white person and a very much a black person. And, this is, you know, the more people see this, the more they get used to it. And that's what they're doing here. They're getting us used to seeing this kind of thing more and more so that it's not strange. Joe Biden made the point that it was that TV sitcom, right? Grace and Will and Grace, that about a homeless. I never saw it actually. I think I saw part of it once or something. But very popular show for years. A homosexual and a regular couple living, you know, person living together just as friends. And of course, the homosexual is such a great person, and they show him that way, you know. So then he says that's what caused the change in attitudes of the American public about homosexuality, and now homosexuals are just the most wonderful people. Or in people like Ellen DeGeneres, you know, all these cuddly, wonderful characters who everybody starts to love, and then, well, you can't think anything bad about them, and then now they can, you know, they're just going to be regular, normal citizens like everyone else and be a part of the community, and nobody can say anything about them.
Yeah. Of course, this propaganda has an effect, and they're well aware of it. They're always warning us about the evil people who want to make propaganda against people of color, against immigrants, against the Jews, and how terrible the world would be if those people were allowed to do that, allowed to have a voice and be able to do that. And the truth is that they're doing the opposite, is encouraging people to hate whites and encouraging race mixing. And, you know, it was done very gradually under the pretense that what they wanted, that the liberalism, the project of liberalism was equality and fairness for everyone. And it has gradually over time, the mask has slipped, and to the point now where it's pretty obvious and pretty blatant that they expect us not to be equal. And it's subtle still. It's not, there are some cases where they put it right in our face and pretty explicit. But for the most part, like in the coverage of the Sweden riots, it's very subtle. And they say, oh, you know, multiculturalism is failing. And then they say, well, whose fault is that? It's the natives' fault for not being accommodating enough, for not doing enough. These inequalities between the immigrants and the natives are all the natives' fault. And so this attribution of blame by the media for things is important. When you've got 24/7 the television news reports all pretty much repeating this very subtle drip, drip, drip message that race mixing is normal and natural, homosexuality is the same thing. They're not interested in just having people treat that as yet another choice. They're putting it on a pedestal, elevating race mixing, elevating the immigrant above the citizen, elevating the things that they want to happen, the way that they want to change society, as Joe Biden acknowledged openly. He acknowledged it in a positive way, saying it was a good thing. But and the only difference with us is we say it's happening. Yes, it is. Jews do have influence, powerful influence, but we think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, but he still acknowledged it. I think it's terribly important that he acknowledged it in that way. That's Joe Biden sticking his foot in his mouth again.
Oh, sure.
Don't you think so, Hattie?
Yeah, because a lot of people still don't like that stuff, even, I mean, especially this homosexual crap. How many right-wing Christians are out there? Millions, tens of millions of them probably, and none of them like that stuff, and Joe Biden has just told them that Jews push this crap.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now there's the good thing about Christians. One reason I defend Christians, they stand up for some things that need to be stood up for, and they're some of the last people to do it. But yeah, I mean, this needs to be used, I think. I think what he wrote should be used by everybody on our side. We need to figure out, maybe at the White Network, we need to figure out how we can use this in an effective way. Maybe you're going to talk about this some more. Is this going to be part of what's in your program tomorrow?
The Jewish problem, sure. It's one of the facets that I point out. But yeah, we ought to publicize it and make it better known, not let them forget it.
They wish
that he hadn't said it. This Jonathan Chait, who commented on Biden, didn't deny any of what Biden said. He just was a bit worried about the anti-Semites, you know, who control major news organizations and certain governments in the world, getting a lot of mileage out of this. I mean, he tried to divert it's not the Jews that are the problem. Changing all these, it's the anti-Semites, which is one of their classic techniques, and that's what it's really about. That's one of the main tricks that they use is, okay, yeah, there's a problem, but who's to blame for it? These people over here, not us, not the Jews. It's these guys, whoever these guys are, usually the anti-Semites, it's the Puritans, it's the WASPs, it's white people is another very common one. Too many whites in Hollywood is a good example of that one. Too many whites wearing Google Glass. When it's really Jews that there's too many of. Mm-hmm. But that's one of the ways that Jews are white, is when they want to pin something bad that they're doing on somebody else. Suddenly they're white.
I looked at this article on Politico by Jennifer Epstein, and she just about quoted his entire talk. And it's just amazing the things he said. I mean, I've got them all here and bolded from this article. And, you know,
that's good. That's what we should be searching out, is a full transcript or a full video of his presentation. So people can see there's nothing more effective than seeing the words coming out of Joe Biden's mouth himself.
Really? Really? And he's not you know, he's not being contradicted, and nobody's, some people say, oh, this is making all the anti-Semites happy. Well, true, it did make us happy. But I know you don't want to be called an anti-Semite, Tan, but I don't mind myself. So,
Look, it's just that I understand that there's multiple meanings to that, and yeah. Our meaning is not the common understanding of that word. It's the same reason that I don't say I'm a racist, I'm a anti-Semite, I'm a whatever, or I'm a radical, because when in normal parlance, when those words are used, they're used to basically say he's a bad person, he's an evil person, he's stupid, he's crazy. Mm-hmm. That's the meaning that's intended, even though there is a literal meaning that you can use. By the time you've explained the literal meaning to people, that's it. You've already lost the argument, because it's an emotional argument. It's not, and it's about tapping into the billions of dollars that they've spent conditioning people to have certain responses to certain words. We can't avoid that. We can confront it in podcasts where we talk about it, and that's the point of the whole podcast. But in everyday exchanges, we shouldn't go around using those labels for ourselves. I don't think.
Well, what do you think about those labels, Hattie? Do they bother you, or?
No, I'm really not that worried about scaring people. You know, I manage to say things in a tone of voice and in a manner that kind of unnerves people, because I say some very radical things in a calm tone, and it just gets right past them, and you know, I don't worry about being called by any particular label if it's accurate. I'm a radical. There's a certain magnetism to those words. You know that those words they have a kind of an aura around them. People are afraid of them, but they're also attracted to them. You know.
No, yeah, Hattie, I don't think the issue is whether you're being called or being afraid of being called, because you're going to be called those names. And I recognize I can't do anything to stop people from calling me names like that. The question or the issue, I think, is do you accept it, identify it yourself that way? How do you self-identify?
Right.
How do you present yourself?
Yeah, I was
going to
say.
I am a radical. I am a racist. I am a National Socialist.
Are you an anti-Semite, Hattie? Are you comfortable with that word?
You know, I don't really like to identify myself as anti anything, because if you're anti, then you're centered on something outside of yourself. Yeah. I don't really care if Jews exist somewhere in the world, but I don't like what's going on here from Jews. I can put it that way.
Right. Well, that brings us back to what Jews are doing. And that's really what the whole thing is. And what
it's a matter of being essentially or accidentally anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish in Aristotelian terms. I suppose I'm accidentally anti-Jewish insofar as I happen to belong to a population that is on the receiving end of some negative behavior from Jews. Essentially, I don't care about Jews.
Yeah. Yeah, well, but we can't get away from them. They care about us, don't they? You know, the fact that they are, you know, and the fact that now we've got this thing from Biden, which I really, the more I look at it and the more I think about it, I think it's terribly, you know, we're just fortunate that he did this. And that we could really make a lot out of this, and
it's a mistake. Yeah, definitely,
huge
it's a gap
mistake. Yeah.
On their side, and we should take full advantage of it and not be put off from doing so.
You know, that's, and here's sure. Right in the beginning, he says, and this was what they used as the title of this article. This Jennifer Epstein used, "Jewish heritage is American heritage." So what, you know? That's the kind of thing people could just hear it and let it pass by, you know, not think much about it. But if you think about it, that means Jews have taken over our heritage and made our heritage their heritage.
Yeah. Well, they've taken over our imaginations. That's what.
But where's our heritage? What's our heritage?
And we don't have a heritage.
Somewhere he says it goes all the way back to the Constitution. I mean, Biden said that. Here it is. We talk about it in terms of the incredible accomplishments and contributions of Jews in America, Biden added, but it's deeper, quote, because the values are so deep and so ingrained in American culture, in our Constitution. So Jewish values are ingrained in our Constitution. Of course, he thinks Jewish values are freedom and justice and, you know, for all.
Right, the face value of what they argue rather than what they're really arguing, which is their own particular interests masked by those high ideals of universalist freedom, liberty, and equality, all of that nonsense.
Yeah, here he says 5,000 years of Jewish history, tradition, and culture, independence, individualism, fairness, decency, justice, charity. You know, Can you believe that?
For ourselves and our posterity, and excluding the Indians and the Negroes and the first immigration law being restricting naturalization to free white persons, the founders were liberals, classical liberals, and were infected with these ideas that later blossomed into poisonous form. But it wasn't a suicide pact that they wrote. They were very conscious of themselves, their legacy, their posterity, and creating a basically a white nationalist state. And some people fault them for not being explicit enough. Why didn't they write that they were a whites-only state? Why didn't they exclude Jews right from the get-go? Well, it's the problem then is the same as the problem today. You know, why don't we have a balanced budget amendment? Then we would have a balanced budget. No, we wouldn't. It doesn't matter what's written on a piece of paper if the people don't have the will to go forth with it. And you don't need to write it on a piece of paper if you actually have the will to do something or not to do something. It's where there's a will, there's a way. Where there's no will, there's no way. Immigration is another good example where we have plenty of laws. We don't need any new laws to enforce the border and deport all of the aliens. There is no need for reform. There's need for enforcement of the laws, but the immigration laws that exist.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, that's it. That's
okay. Well, Hattie, do you have anything to say about the Constitution?
Well, I just wonder which part of the Constitution, which version of the Constitution Biden thinks is Jewish. The Constitution prior to the 14th Amendment is completely different. It's complete. The 14th Amendment changes the whole nature of the United States Constitution.
Well, he's such an idiot. He thinks the Constitution is similar to the 5,000 years of Jewish history, tradition, and culture, which he defines as independence, individualism, fairness, decency, justice, charity, I guess. That's what he thinks is in the Constitution.
Well, he gives the Jews a hell of a lot of credit for ideas, some of which are associated with ancient Greece, like individualism and justice and probably charity, too. I don't know. I guess Jews just invented everything.
Well, yeah, he is accepting the Jews' version of their history, none of which is any of this.
Well, he's just kissing a bunch of Jewish butt. There's what he's doing.
Really?
You know, from what I've read, the United States Constitution is pretty much Anglo-Saxon in its nature, as originally written. It's kind of
Hattie, I think you should write an article about Biden and the Constitution. How about that? Make that a project.
Biden is a good example of part of the problem that we're facing is of white people who don't just have no white identity, no positive idea of themselves as a white person and seeking the best interests of whites, but as somebody who has actually adopted vicariously some other people's ideas and best interests. And wholeheartedly embrace them. And in part because he can't be a white person and be a politician. He would be drummed out of office. He would be bashed as a racist before he was removed from office. But he can express that need to root for and be part of a larger team by doing it with the Jews. And ironically, he's a liberal, left-wing, supposedly. And it's mostly right-wingers that fall into that trap, or you know, I felt it myself. I'm maybe projecting it a bit in that I had a feeling of patriotism, of you know, wanting to be part of a larger thing, and got sucked into the whole neocon thing because of the tough talk and the appeal that they have to nationalism. They don't want to appeal to nationalism, and they put it down. They are anti-racist, but it's generally white right-wingers who respond in that way to having their white identity suppressed or pathologized, and they say, well, I got to have some identity, so, well, first of all, I'll be a right-winger, but second of all, I'll be for, you know, bombing those brown people on the other side of the planet for the good of democracy. That's the identity, and I'm going to root for poor little Israel, too, and that's a big part of it. And Biden's a little bit odd in that he's like a right-winger. He's like a neocon in that sense, vicariously, having a vicarious identity of in favor. So he's as pro-Jewish as any Jew, or as Zionist as any Jew.
Oh, yeah, he makes that real clear. You know, I was just going to ask, you know, is it his long, many, many years of being a politician that have caused him to become what a piece of puke he is today? What else could he become, I guess?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, how conscious is he of it?
Yeah. The Wikipedia article about Biden is pretty unambiguous in that regard. Biden is a self-described Zionist during the interview conducted by the U.S. Jewish television cable network Shalom TV. Biden said, I am a Zionist. You don't have to be a Jew to be a Zionist. He is highly supportive of the state of Israel and views Israel as a strategic ally in the Middle East. He stated that the Arab nations have known that there is no daylight between us and Israel. Wow.
Really, you know, he's a self-professed enemy of the white people. He's made that clear. He's on the Jewish side, and so this should, you know, he's the vice president of the United States. So a lot could be made of that, you know, that he's actually, you know, being he's not for his own. The people of this country, what, 3% of the population is Jewish? Boy, you know, I just hope we see. I haven't been looking around to see if people have written much about this, but there's still plenty of time.
I contrasted it with what happened 40 years ago with President Nixon and Billy Graham in the Oval Office discussing Jewish media influence, and they thought it was bad, that the country was going to go down the drain if something wasn't done about it. But the thing that's interesting about that is they were too scared to say that publicly.
Yeah, and
now,
that was 1970
right.
something.
The media influence has been reaffirmed, this time publicly, but in a positive sense. Biden, you know, praising it rather than whispering about the Jews in the privacy of the Oval Office. He's announcing it publicly. It's a measure of the increase in Jewish influence and power that now they've even got in the White House people who are no longer opposed to them, even nominally. Well, you know, Nixon, I guess you could argue, was more of a, you know, just a cynical politician playing power factions against each other. And Biden is definitely not. He's decided who the winning team is, and he's going to be with them 150%. Even to the point where it makes him look like a even worse than everybody thinks he's stupid, but now he's a suck up too. He's just an ass licker.
Yeah, and he's talking about running for president in the next whatever it is, 2016. At least somebody's speculating that. But he would have the nerve to think that he could do that, or the foolishness. And so this is This is really good news if it's handled right, if it's not just allowed to be passed by.
I think the reality is that there won't be another white male heterosexual president in the United States. From here on, it's going to be one diversity or another.
Yeah, well, they say this thing that I saw him saying that he was considering it. He was not saying he wouldn't, and at his age too. But we're talking about Hillary. That Hillary would be probably too tough of a competition for him for the Democratic nomination. And so there, she would be okay. She's white, but she's female.
Hillary already had her chance and lost to the mulatto with no experience.
Yeah, so, but she's going to try again.
No, it's not going to happen. So.
You don't think so? It'll be another person.
Her and Geraldine Ferraro got told during that first time around for Obama that, you think you're a woman and that somehow differentiates you from white men, but it doesn't because ultimately you're white. And, the woman thing was just used to divide and conquer white people. And white women aren't any better than white males. They're just one notch above, maybe, in the leftist Jewish pecking order about who's on the bottom of the heap. It's white heterosexual men at the very bottom. White women are just one step above that, and homosexuals are just one step above that. Everybody else, all the people of non-whiteness and the Jews, are above us in their pecking order.
Well, you know what bothers me, burns me up even today, is that back when Obama was running for president and they had to pick that horrible McCain, who everybody hated, to make sure that Obama could get elected. And there are all these white nationalists saying, oh, it's great, let Obama get elected. It'll show everybody how incompetent blacks are, and they'll never want another black person in power. Well, I argued, I said, that's, I was going to vote for the Libertarian, but I didn't want Obama to be elected at all. And I said, it's going to start a very bad precedent. And I argued against that. But all these dopes were all like supporting Obama, but it happened just as I thought. He gets in, and no matter how bad of a job he does, they portray it differently and blame other people, as you say, Tan.
Yeah.
And nothing is held against him, and then he wins a second term. Now it's like where everybody is saying there's never going to be another white president, once he got
in.
So he did set that precedent, and yet, I'm supposed to be somebody who doesn't know anything, and all these people, guys, think they're so smart. They're too clever for their own good.
You're thinking of David Duke, aren't you?
No, it wasn't David Duke. I'm thinking of somebody much less well-known than David Duke. But did David Duke argue that?
I think that he was of that opinion. He predicted that it would be – I don't think he used the term worse is better. But, he was trying to see the positive prospect of having a black president. And there is some argument to that. And there has been some waking up of people to just how they would like not to think about race. But for the last 6 years, it's been race, and you can't escape being white. There, even if you try to pretend that being white doesn't matter to you, this whole white privilege narrative is going to find you and hold you accountable anyway, and make you get up and confess your sins for being white, and hand over your money and apologize at the same time.
You want to say anything, Hattie, about that issue of black presidents?
Yeah, I don't think Obama is much worse than George W. Bush.
No, but he's black.
people have a clearer idea of what's going on. It was kind of humorous in a grim way after the 2008 election to hear people calling in to talk radio shows frantic, but what they were frantic about was that Obama was a socialist or a communist or whatever. And I knew perfectly well that wasn't really what was bothering them. Mm-hmm. People just don't say what they really think,
They don't think it. I think. I think a lot
of
them.
On some level, they know what's really bothering them. They're just in the habit of not saying it.
On some deep, deep level, it's related to the same thing when people engaging in white flight say, I'm just looking for a good school in a nice neighborhood. And they're not consciously thinking of themselves with no niggers. They're thinking a nice neighborhood with good schools, safe and clean. But the reality is they don't want to live next to blacks. But and I talk to people all the time and try to push it in their face and say it, not in a rude way, not in an offensive way, but just matter of factly. And the damnedest thing is most of the people will agree in private, especially if it's not in front of a group of people that might out them as a nasty racist. Once they know that I accept that race exists and that that's why they're doing it, then they go, I guess you're right. I would never put it that way, but yeah, okay.
Well, you see, that's what you're saying is what I've said, is that, yes, they do know it, but they're scared to death to say it. They're scared to a degree that's irrational, because nobody is going to lose his job because he called into a talk radio show, probably under a pseudonym, and made some politically incorrect comment. That would be egregious if that happened. As far as whether a white male can become president of the United States again, I wrote an article explaining how the Republicans could become the dominant party again if they would just adopt some sane policies. The problem is that the ideological camps into which the two political parties, the two main political parties, have divided themselves, are practically designed to keep the electorate deeply divided and somewhere near equally divided. Because, you know, the Republicans are throwing away a very large part of the white vote by grumbling all the time about social programs that help people that are down on their luck. The Republicans need to get off that stuff, because that's why they lost the election with Romney. That's why they lost the election with Barry Goldwater. They probably would have won a lot more elections. They could probably even have a lock on the White House if the Republicans would move to the left on economics and not be the enemy of the poor white person.
They could unite all white people in the Republican Party, is what you're saying.
They would get some of the non-whites, too, because some of the non-whites are not really happy about immigrants either.
Yeah, my argument is that not that the mechanics are impossible, that it's physically impossible, it's that the people who control the levers of power are not going to let it happen.
Not because the United States is
currently structured.
The two political parties are controlled by evil elites that have agendas totally different from the rank and file. You saw that at the two national conventions where they had their crooked voice votes, the two voice votes at the Republican convention designed to minimize influence of the Ron Paul supporters, and the crooked voice vote at the Democratic National Convention where they put in Jerusalem as the capital of Israel.
Yeah.
So we got two crooked political parties. You know what I'm hoping for? You know what I think is a logical, possible consequence of all this undermining of the political process? We could end up with a military dictatorship. Because when you undermine the electoral process, that's a logical step. You know, why respect the democratic process when it's crooked? There's no reason. Therefore, if you have the power to take over the government, which, you know, somebody that has a substantial military command might have, then why not do it? There's no moral reason not to do it if the democratic process is corrupt.
Yeah, well, that's why it's important that in our country the military has been conditioned to think that they serve something higher. They don't serve the people. They serve the Constitution, to protect and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that includes Israel in their thinking. You know, and they are where there's a problem with Christian Zionism, it's the military has that problem big time, in that the higher-ups in the military, the generals, who are for the most part solidly racially white, are, like Biden, think in terms of what's best for Israel and go on junkets to Israel to learn all about the poor, plucky little Jewish people and their struggle for survival, and to see them as needing protection. And so they won't side with anyone who's saying the kind of things that we're saying, because we're, you know, racist Nazis, anti-Jewish, and that's the worst thing that you could be. It's unfortunate, because there is the biggest hope for us is in the still mostly white military and mostly white police, and it's going to get much worse for us as those two institutions turn more and more non-white.
Yeah, but the thing about these top military people is they deal with practical considerations. a lot of the generals, like Marine Corps Commandant, I think that's his title, General Zinni, was opposed to invading Iraq. These guys, these military men at the high level, they have to deal with practical reality. They have to think in practical terms. They may not be idealists about anything, but they have to try to do something that makes sense. And that's going to, that if we just had that, that would exclude a lot of the baloney that's going on right now.
Yeah.
Well, what are they being overruled? You know, how
the country is not being run in a rational manner. It's nobody is running the country really. We've got a chaotic, a non-system that is influenced by Jews that control mass media, but there is no, it's not being run coherently in any particular way.
Yeah.
Well, the goal seems to be to keep the world safe for plutocracy, which means keeping it safe for Jewry. And we just had, even more recently than Zinni, we had the example of the whole Hegel, what I call the Hegel cost, where the, you know, Hegel seemed like a pretty solid guy, as far as being concerned about soldiers and the lives of the soldiers and doing what's best for America, and his statement about being an American senator, not an Israeli senator. And the Jews brought him to heel, basically, by, you know, his ambition was to be Secretary of Defense. And so he kissed whatever rings and whatever asses he had to, said whatever he had to make nice with the Jews, to convince them that he would indeed serve their interests first as the Secretary of Defense of the United States. And how bizarre that is. That it was done pretty much out in the open. Another, like Biden's statement, a pretty much an open example of Jewish power and influence and just how powerful they are.
Well, that's right. And you know, what about all these people still trying to say that the Jews are not the problem? It's those white people who are going along with them. It's those white people who bend to their will. It's those white people. It's all those corporate heads. It's all these white Zionists, non-Jewish Zionists. It's Zionism. And I'm sick of hearing about Zionism. And that's another thing that David Duke, I look at on his website right after that show with Ron, and I just saw the word Zionist everywhere. Of course, he also has the word Jewish and Jew some places.
Or even the argument that they're a minority. It's only 2%, and you know, we're still the vast majority, and so it's our fault. I remember Tom Metzger had made that point. And that, of course, is a Jewish argument. That's what the Jews say in their own defense is, oh, we're just a tiny minority. How could we possibly have such power and influence? Well, the fact is they have the power and influence. I don't care what their numbers are. And in a good sense, to put a good light and interpretation on why people say that thing, you know, because I don't have any doubt that Tom Metzger has the best interests of whites in his mind, but mm-hmm. I think people want to say that because they want to take responsibility. That's one of our problems, is we do want to take responsibility. It's sort of what's behind white supremacism, is the idea that only we really matter. If we could just get our shit together, nobody else would be able to oppose us.
Well, it's so also, it's also, though, that they feel that if it's our problem, we can do something about it.
That
and
too.
If the Jews are so powerful, there's nothing we can do about it. But if we turn it back to ourselves, then they can still tell people, and they're trying to talk to white people and get them to act and do things. I think that's a big part of the reason, even if they might not even be fully conscious of it. It just kind of all fits together.
A point
but
I've
the
made
fact
before.
Is that these white people who are going along with the Jews and helping them wouldn't be doing it if the Jews weren't so darn powerful. And that power started hundreds of years ago.
Yeah, it goes way back. And you can find evidence of it going back all the way in history, at least as far back as Rome. Somebody brought that up as a counterexample and recently with me, something I was critiquing. And, oh, why didn't the Jews have power in Rome? You know, why did this multiculturalism problem only start recently if the Jews are such a problem and it's a biological problem? Well, the fact is, if you look at the history, you can actually find evidence of Jewish manipulation going all the way back as far as history is recorded.
You know, they got power over the wealthy. They got power over the rulers by lending them money. They have some kind of a magical ability with money, I'll tell you. And they got hold of that money thing, and they loaned money to, like, say, in the Middle Ages, to all these little rulers and dukes and so on, and when you can't do without something. They got him addicted. They got him addicted to it. Thanks, Addie. That's what they've done to us now. They've gotten us addicted to every kind of thing, that they want to, you know, we need to worry about, to do something about our addictive nature or our addictions. But that's what it is. You know, we're addicted to the culture they've given us. We're addicted to their movies. We're addicted to their television.
Right, but you know, the way I see it is, if a person or even white people are susceptible to a particular disease, I don't think to myself, well, you know, white people are flawed. You know, we suck. Wouldn't be diseased if we were perfect or better. I think to myself, okay, there is some flaw that this disease afflicts or that makes us vulnerable. Let's do something about it. Let's talk about it. Let's figure out how we can stop it.
Yeah.
And, that's different from, oh yeah, white people suck because we failed for all this time and we have some inherent weakness that the Jews are taking advantage of. Because saying we suck means basically doing nothing, means giving up.
Yeah, well, they know how to take advantage of those things, and they started way back with and they always go to the rulers too. They go to the people at the top. And somehow they succeed in being these secret advisors of these people. And I mean, it's just—it's uncanny. It's amazing, and we see a lot of it in the International Jew. Were you going to say something, Hadding, about that?
Oh, I could. I think it's in Deuteronomy. It says something like that: the Jews will be able to overcome their enemies through their enemies' own vices, or something like that. You know, we have a lot of crooked and cowardly people in our race, and in the United States especially, I would say. Basically, you cannot get elected to office in the United States, or it's extremely difficult to get elected to office in the United States. The cards are stacked against you if you're an honest man. You have to play that game of catering to the party faithful in the party primary, and then running to the center during the general election and trying to appear as a moderate. And then when you get to wherever you're going, then you have to cater to the lobbyists, all right? Unless you've got a very solid support system behind you, solid grassroots movement, which very few people ever build. You know, so the whole system really encourages thriving of the most dishonest people that we have. Those are the people that come to positions of leadership.
Yeah.
And of course the Jews can take advantage of that.
Venal is the word for it.
Yeah.
It's,
we have a lot of venal people. And even within white nationalism, you'll see a lot of people. They don't care about doing the right thing for the right thing's sake. They'll come out and say that they don't care about doing the right thing for the right thing's sake. I've seen that. They don't care about telling the truth. They don't care. You know what? The big secret that a lot of people don't seem to get is that if you do the right thing, if you're committed to doing the right thing, you're much more likely to get what you want than if you're constantly calculating and trying to figure out what the odds are. You know, if you're committed to doing the right thing, you're going to have a perseverance that will much more likely carry you through than if you're constantly changing course because of calculations.
Hadding, I don't think that reality bears that out. I mean, I feel the same way you do about being truthful and honest, and I think that that's noble, and it comes naturally to whites more so than other people. But it appeals to us instinctively, but it isn't actually empirically the way the route to success. The route to success is Joe Biden's example of just kissing whatever ass he has to. And he doesn't even really have to because he's vice president. He doesn't need to
Joe
say
Joe Biden
these
succeeds at what?
At being famous.
Vice president.
And powerful.
Yeah, he succeeds at winning a gold star from the enemies of his race. Yeah, what a success that is. Do I want to be that kind of success? No.
Well, I agree there, too. But the fact of the matter is that he sees himself as a success, and the majority of people in the country see him as a success.
I don't see that as a success.
You don't. You're in the minority, like Marcus Aurelius
said. Well, you see, that gets down to my fundamental point again, which is the idea of calculating based on circumstances. You see, if I am doing the right thing because I want to do the right thing, then I am a success because I am doing the right thing. If Joe Biden wants to win gold stars from his Jewish masters, he has to jump through hoops to do it.
Boy, he just has to be Joe Biden, I guess. Okay, you know, we don't have a lot of time left. Let's turn to the Swedish riots as an example of what it tells us about what we can expect here, what any white people anywhere in the world can expect, that there's not going to be, that there's going to be this shocking time come when the country that you always considered your own country is going to see you as a less than equal and not going to come to your aid, and you're going to be treated like probably non-white people would say, well, that's the way we used to be treated, and now it's your turn. I don't know. Could we have some comments on that?
Well, it's what spurred me. I was upset about immigration, didn't really understand the history of it or why I was upset. But as I got deeper and deeper into it, what I realized was is the government is not unaware of what's going on. They are well aware of it, and they are just on the other side. They favor the immigrants, the even illegal immigrants, over the citizenry of their own country. And despite all the highfalutin talk about representing our interests or even everybody's interests, it's not even that. They favor the immigrants, and that comes out clear in the Sweden example too. Another example, or another thing that comes through clear, is that it's coming from the top down. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people want to say, oh, look, it's the white police. Oh, we suck. Whites suck. Well, those white policemen aren't the ones giving the orders. It's their higher ups. And even the police chiefs in charge of whole platoons of policemen don't give the orders, don't set the basic shape. And what's happening in Sweden is that the police, and the Swedes have seen this themselves, for 5 days stood aside while the immigrants burned and rioted and did nothing. And then when the Swedes finally had enough and started to organize and come out into the streets themselves to do something about it, to do what the police wouldn't do, then the police sprang into action to stop the Swedes and arrest the Swedes and turn the Swedes back home. It's reminiscent, too, of what the Obama administration did to Arizona when Arizona passed a law which is pretty much exactly echoing federal law on immigration, and far from being derelict in its in not doing anything, the federal government jumped, sued Arizona, and stopped it dead. And did the same thing with California 15 years earlier, just did it more quietly behind the scenes without alerting too many people to it. They did it openly in Arizona, and now in Sweden we're seeing, even when violence erupts, instead of blaming the people who are rioting and burning cars and being violent, and who are aliens who don't even belong in Sweden. If they're not happy there, they should be told to go home. That's the easy solution to the problem. But instead, the media and even the politicians in Sweden are telling their own police to crack down on the Swedes. The Jews that control the power that they have is money. It's also ideas. And even though there may not be a Jewish prime minister in, you know, giving these commands, the ideas that the whites have that are giving the commands in Sweden are these Jewish ideas of we can't have another Holocaust. If we were to clean up our streets and send all the immigrants packing, you know, we'd have to use boxcars and concentration camps, and people would accuse us of
genocide. But that's not really their real reason. Now, I was going to say then, why would the leaders of all these governments of supposedly used to be or should be white countries, be working against their own citizenry and pro-immigration in this extreme way? And you already answered it. You said it's Jews behind it.
If they don't, they lose their job at every level, including the prime minister.
Well, who's running it all? Oh, we didn't get to our final topic, but I'll bring it up now. Who's running it all if it's not Jews? And if this is not Jews, this is not evolutionary psychology behind this of the Jews. It's criminal conspiracy that the Jews can manage to influence all these governments and all these government leaders and put them in place and tell them what to do.
Well, you say you're asked the question, who's doing it? I don't think it is any one entity or one person doing it, of course. I think it's a collection of ideas. It's that simple, that these perceptions, these widely held perceptions that white people don't have a valid identity, don't have a right to their own nations, their own homogenous.
Where does this idea come
countries.
From?
It's
who,
one
who introduced this idea?
The biggest example that comes up, if you scratch the surface and push against it a little bit, is the Holocaust, which is why, and the whole Jewish narrative, if not the Holocaust, then the blood libels, discrimination
Jewish.
Against minorities. Yes, it's all coming from Jews. It's
yeah.
white people thinking the best interests of everybody but white people.
So how did Jews get their ideas to be dominant in amongst all white leadership and so on? Because it started out, it's communist too. It's a communist way of thinking, and the Jews invented and started, you know, created communism, and they're still around, and so the same communist ideas are still around, even though people want to say there's no more communism. And therefore, it's more conspiracy than evolution. Hattie?
Jews didn't invent communism. Marx was a Jew. But there was communism before Marx.
Well, yeah, but, you know, the Jews took that up. That was natural to them. They were behind the communists. Let's not argue who did the communist revolution. Boy, you get a lot of enemies when you start saying
Multi nemici, molto honore.
Okay. But I think he means they don't know what they're talking about.
Enemies, much honor.
Okay. Motto. Well, you know, what I'm just trying to point out that this whole idea that white people and nationalism and so on and racialism and so on is bad was what was being promoted in communist Soviet Union, and the Jews were running all that show. So just because non-Jews join up with it is like Biden. They're going to join what looks like the strong team.
And, they shift and adapt to whatever they have to get their way. But the guiding force is what's best for the Jews. They are hyper-conscious of themselves as Jews. And the guiding principle of being a Jew is what's best for the Jews. They're constantly thinking about what their best interests are. And
so that
next
makes
thing
it a criminal conspiracy, doesn't it? I mean, it's more that than just that, oh, these people, these Jews all think alike, so that's how this all came about. There's more to it than that. There's a head to this. There's leadership, and they're telling people what to do, and they're communicating. Like you said, organization. They're communicating right. with one another at the top level, and it is like this thing up there holding the puppet strings and determining how things are going to go in the world and who's going to do what. It really is like that, I think.
And the Jews being on top, both financially and politically. And morally, you know, as being held up as the saints of the world, is not an accident. It's an emergent property. It wasn't, you know, you could say that some of the Jews consciously pursued that, but did they all get together in a giant conclave and say, how are we going to, you know, get to this, and this top level goal? I don't think it is that. I think it is as simple as this simple rule. You follow this simple rule. I'm a Jew. What's best for the Jews is my guiding principle. It sort of echoes what Hadding was recommending for us is just having a principle of doing what you can where you can. Jews do the same thing. And out of that comes Jewish power because of all people, they organize. They are supreme at organization. And also part of a lot of what their organization does and a lot of their goals is to anesthetize us, to keep us from organizing, the pathologization, the demonization, boycotting, suing, illegalizing, anything that we might do, categorizing it as hate so that people just won't do it because they don't want to be associated with it. And it's a two-sided coin.
But they have a racial identity and more than that. They have an identity of suffering and having to stick together, or they'll be demolished by larger groups of people. Yeah. So they have that, and that's what holds them together. And that's why
they
obey what they're told to do. And as it's been said, they're told this in every synagogue, you know, not just in the United States, everywhere. And in every kind of organization that they have created, that these people go to, this is all being pushed everywhere. And so they are being given orders in this kind of a way, you know, even though they're not from one person passing down the orders to everybody. But there
it's
is
Jewish
I think,
school.
The
it's what they,
is.
Yeah, if they inculcate their children from a very early age, sending them off to Jewish school to learn what it means to be a Jew. What the Jewish history is from a totally Jewish point of view, excusing the Jews for everything that they do and blaming the anti-Semites, which is basically everybody but Jews. It's a positive identity that they give to their kids in the sense that they see themselves as good and everybody else as their enemy.
Yeah, and so I don't think it's wrong to use the protocols to get across this idea of this massive kind of, what would you say, hydra-headed, I don't want to say that, but this massive kind of a thing going on. I don't think it's wrong, because I think we need to get across to people in some way how big this thing is and how it is a worldwide kind of a thing. I'll leave you guys to end this up. We've only got a few seconds.
Yeah, I think the Nordic people are vulnerable to this kind of thing because of their inborn tendency toward individualism, which is aggravated by Protestant Christianity, which encourages people to think in terms of aspiring towards some ideal of saintliness rather than guarding their gene pool.
Okay. Well, we need to change this. I don't want to change ourselves, but we need to get it across. And we certainly have our work cut out for us, don't we?
Right. I wouldn't center anything on the protocols, but I certainly wouldn't run away from it. And I'm inspired to try and read it again. The first time I tried to read it, it was just gobbledygook to me.
Yeah,
I didn't see the deeper.
Yeah, it's historical fiction. If you cite it, you just look silly. But
okay,
you can use
well,
it for ideas.
You know,
I like Henry Ford's work much better than the protocols.
Well, I like Henry Ford's work, too. It's a lot more easy to follow and understand. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being here with us for our birthday program. We'll see you again.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit Carolyn's website at carolynyager.com.